Light and darkness is a theme that runs through the Bible from the beginning to end. The first chapter of the Bible records God's first words, "Let there be light." And we're told that God saw the light and the light was good. And the last chapter of the Bible looks to the future and talks about the heavenly city where people have no need of lamps or even the sun, because the Lord God will give them light. The light runs all the way through the Bible, from beginning to end as a theme. And I think maybe today we lose the force of that light and darkness imagery because we now live in a world that's never completely dark. There's pollution in our towns, so that light is reflected from the night sky. We can only properly see the stars if we move away from the towns. And if you can see the stars, they're giving out quite a bit of light as well. In our homes, everything glows, doesn't it? Our phones, our alarm clocks, little neon lights on the wall. It's never completely dark. But the Bible was written at a time when people often experience complete darkness. And I think they knew the importance of light rather more than we do today. I can only think of one or two occasions when I've experienced total darkness. Some of them would have been down a pothole. Darkness when it's so dark that literally you cannot see your hand in front of your face. And it's scary. You need light in order to be able to move safely. But in the Bible, the image of light and darkness is not just applied to the physical world, but also to our spiritual understanding. Light is a symbol for what God shows us about himself. It's God's self-revelation. And just as we need light to be able to move safely in the dark, we need God's spiritual light to make sense of the world we live in and how we should make our way through life. If we live in ignorance or denial of God, if we live in darkness rather than light, if we believe that life is just the result of a random collection of atoms, then we're going to make different choices than those we make if we believe that God made us and cares for us and has given us life for a purpose. If we put our trust in God, then we will live by the light of God. Now, God's clearest revelation of himself to his people, and that includes you and me, has been through Jesus. God the Son, born as one of us in time and in history. He's God's brightest light for us. His birth was predicted in this way through the prophets who God sent. Isaiah writes, and we often read this at Christmas time, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned," referring to Jesus, looking forward to the time when Jesus will be born. And when Mary and Joseph brought the baby Jesus to the temple when he was 8 days old, they were greeted by an old man, Simeon, who predicts, again quoting from Isaiah, that Jesus will be a light for revelation to the nations. So that theme of darkness and light runs through the Bible. And it's picked up by Jesus and the gospel writers who recorded his words. So John's Gospel tells the story of Jesus visiting Jerusalem at the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. And part of that feast was the lighting of four great lamps within the temple and having a great celebration of light. And at the end of the feast, Jesus says to the crowds, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." That's an extraordinary claim, but Jesus makes it. I am the light of the world. I'm the way to show you through life and how you should live it. We don't know whether the teaching of Jesus that Matthew records, that Alex just read to us, we don't know whether that took place before or after this extraordinary statement by Jesus, "I'm the light of the world." But certainly Matthew wrote it down well after Jesus had made this statement, and he had many years to reflect on Jesus' words. And he records Jesus' teaching that we read earlier. And he says, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. These are familiar words to many of us. We've read them many times before. And it's easy with a familiar passage to gloss over them, to read them without really thinking what they mean. But I think that when we read them carefully, there are a number of surprises in this short passage. And I'm going to comment briefly on four of them this morning. And the first one is a bit of a surprise. Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and they were a pretty motley crew, frankly. They weren't religious leaders. In fact, one of them was a tax collector, a collaborator with the occupying Romans, dead against the religious leaders. They weren't government officials. In fact, one of them was a zealot, someone who was committed to trying to overthrow the government. They weren't rich or famous. In fact, several were poor fishermen. They were a pretty motley crew. Surely what Jesus should have said to them is, you should be the light of the world. Being the light of the world is something you should try to be. But that's not what he says, is it? He says, you are the light of the world. You are the people God has chosen to be the means of his revelation in the world. His light to shine in darkness. And I think he says the same to his followers today, to you and to me. And to be honest, we're also a fairly motley crew, aren't we? We're not particularly strong or clever or articulate, but we are the people who God has chosen to be his light to the world, his means of communicating his good news to the world. And God could choose to broadcast his message in neon lights in the sky. He could perform such amazing miracles that everyone would believe, but he hasn't chosen to do that. For some reason that he alone knows, he chooses his disciples, he chooses folk like you and me to be his light in the world. So that's the first surprise. It's not you should be, it's you are the light of the world. And the second surprise is this. Jesus starts off talking about the light of the world at the beginning of that first verse, which is verse 14, and verse 15 and 16 are all about light, and yet he throws in this strange disconnect in the middle, this isolated statement about a town on the hill. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. What's that all about? Has Jesus forgotten what he was talking about? Or has Matthew not remembered properly? I don't think so. I think it's a deliberate reminder that we're not little lights in isolation, all doing our own little thing, all being our own little revelation, but God has called us into a community to be the light to the world. He's called us into his church. He's called us into his body to work together at being his light in the world. We've done our crafts and made our lamps, but we kind of have another little activity. A little candle here. One little light. It's a bit pathetic, isn't it? It's not giving much light. But supposing that we all have a candle. We're all going to have a candle. I need some volunteers. I've got Sophie and Ollie as my candle lighters. And I need, maybe Lydia and Megan, could you help me as well? Fantastic, we did it without burning the place down. Or burning anybody, yeah, well done. Well done. And it's now quite bright, actually, it's quite warm. It's now quite bright. God doesn't intend us to be little lights on our own. It's a community thing. It's the thing we do together as a church. I'm doing a refresher course in New Testament Greek. So at the moment, for the week starts for me at 8:30 on a Monday morning with a Greek lesson, which is great. And it's quite useful. In English, there are some things which are ambiguous. In the English language, when you say you are something, it could be singular or it could be plural. Not the case in Greek. They distinguish between those. So if you look at the New Testament in Greek, in the language it was written, you can tell whether it's singular or plural. In this case, it wasn't Jesus looking at Peter or looking at John and saying, you individually are the light of the world. It's a plural. He's looking at his disciples, and we don't know how many were there as he sat and taught. And he's saying, you all are the light of the world. So that's the second surprise. The third surprise, well, I guess it's not really a surprise. We tend to think of Jesus' teaching as pretty serious, don't we? It's serious stuff, and it is serious stuff. But I have a feeling that there's an element of humour sometimes in what he taught. And this is an example. He's literally saying to his disciples, look, wouldn't it be totally stupid, totally daft, to go to all the problem of lighting a lamp and putting it under a bowl so that no one could see it? That would be ridiculous. Or putting it under a bushel, as the King James Version used to say. How stupid would that be, to light a lamp and put it under a bowl? The whole purpose of a lamp is to give light, isn't it? So put it on a lampstand. Let people see it. And that's a challenge for us, isn't it? We're not to be secretive about our faith, Jesus says. Not to pretend that God's revelation, God's light, doesn't affect the way we live. We're to let our life shine. As the song that Mark was playing from the musical Godspell puts it, rather awfully, I think. If your light is under a bushel, it's lost something kind of crucial. But it's true, isn't it? It's a waste of time having a lamp and putting it under a bowl so that nobody can see it. So when we go to school on a Monday morning or to the office or whatever, and someone asks, did you have a good day yesterday? What did you get up to? Do we mumble something vague, or do we say that we went to church and had a good time? That's a challenge. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand. So that's the third one. And the fourth one, I think, is at the end of the passage. We sound evangelicals might expect that Jesus would have said something like this: let your light shine before others, that they might hear your powerful testimony or hear your clear explanation of the gospel. But that's not what Jesus says, is it? He says, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. It's our good deeds that people will see. They are likely to be our most powerful testimony. The going out of our way to help others, the getting alongside someone who's facing a tough time, the sticking up for someone who's facing injustice, sticking up for someone who's facing bullying at school, these sorts of things. And of course we should make it clear that we're a Christian. Otherwise, how would they know to glorify your Father in heaven? Of course we shouldn't keep our faith a secret, but good deeds should be the characteristic, the hallmark of disciples of Jesus. And often they will speak louder than words in sharing our light with other people. People probably won't listen to our words. They probably won't listen unless we've earned the right to be heard by our good deeds. Interestingly, the teaching of Jesus that Matthew preserves is very similar to the statement that Peter makes in his first letter. Oh, no. Go back. Yeah. Peter writes, "Live such good lives among the pagans that they may accuse you of doing wrong. They may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." It shouldn't really surprise us, because Peter was one of those who were listening to Jesus' words at this time. It's interesting, in the latest Tearfund magazine, there's an interview with a good friend, Glyn Macaulay, and one of the questions concerns the time when he and a bunch of friends started Tearfund, the relief organisation. And they faced opposition from a number of Christians. Christians were writing to him saying that Christians shouldn't be doing this. They should only be giving to sort of Billy Graham-style evangelism. Unfortunately, John Stott came to the rescue. He recalls saying that relieving poverty is what Scripture says we should be doing. Doing good must go hand in hand with their witness. Yes, we need to take heart the Great Commission, where Jesus tells his disciples to make other disciples, but we should also take to heart the Great Commandment, where Jesus says you should love God with all your heart and love your neighbour as yourself. Martin Luther was renowned for his preaching that we're justified by faith alone, passionate that we're saved by our faith. It's not by what we do. But he also said this: "Oh, it is a living, busy, active, mighty thing, this faith. It is impossible for it not to be doing good works incessantly. Let our good deeds shine before men, so that they will praise our Father." So, four surprises in the passage. You may look at it and find others. But I'd encourage us all to think through these short verses during the year, as we're reminded by our belonging board that we are the light of the world and we need to shine brightly so that God's truth will be known throughout this country.